Hello there, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of CookieCast. Today on CookieCast, it's the football podcast. Season's starting to draw to a close. And for some teams, that's not a good thing. Other teams, it's not a bad thing. And for some teams, it's somewhere in a murky, murky water of uncertainty. Find out what I'm wittering on about by listening to the podcast. Before we get there, please do consider like, share, subscribe and comment. Leave a review where you can leave a review and share the podcast around. Right, let's get started. Here we go. This is CookieCast Football Podcast.
Recording in progress.
Well, hi. Welcome on there. It's your latest football podcast from us here at the CookieCast Podcast Network. Welcome in, ladies and gentlemen. Obviously, I'm here. For those of you watching on YouTube, you'll see that the other three gentlemen are also here. Mesdames Cook, Woodmansey and Moore, to give you the updates on their boys as well as me with my boys. How are we doing this week, fellas?
Not a call, but cracking.
That was a positive affirmation from the whole element of the podcast there. Will that lead to good things later on in the podcast? Who can tell? And we're actually going to start with Hull on this week's podcast from last week's games, as the first game of the week saw Watford taking on Hull City. I'm going to go on a limb and say this one can probably be summed up in about 45 seconds.
Do you know what? I've actually got a reasonable bit written on my page for this one, which is ironic considering that the game later in the week was probably more eventful, and I haven't got anything written down for that one. So we went away to Watford, needing to win, owing them a beating after losing 2-1 at home, as I mentioned last week, and a lot was kind of riding on it. And everything looked great as Carvalho broke into the box on 10 minutes and was brought down. Penalty to Hull. Definite penalty as well, by the way. Probably the clearest one I've seen all season. Up stepped Watford old boy, Ozan Toufan. So you're thinking, old boy rule, he's taking the penalty. And he proceeded to miss it. Hull definitely had the better of the first half. Watford had no shots on target at all in the first half. Moving into the second half, Hull and indeed Toufan managed to get the ball in the net on 52 minutes. And then an offside flag, which I think has only just been put up now, seemed to happen. It was that late. 64th minute, Allsop finally had a save to make from Cody. But it was a bit of a tame effort. The next Watford effort after that was hilarious because it hit the corner flag. So, you know, well done, boys. Excellent shooting. And in the final few minutes, Delap flashed one across the face of goal and Carvalho had a free kick, which was saved. So it seems that they gave it a go, played pretty well. However, the game finished 0-0. Not a defeat. Doesn't put them out of the playoff picture quite mathematically, but did not help anybody for the second game in a row.
Yeah. One of those annoying games where had they just scored the penalty would be in, obviously not to foreshadow the second game of the week, but would be in a much better position than they are. Yeah. As it stands. I mean, not to say they're in a terrible position, and I'd rather be in their position than the Borough position, which we'll discuss later on. But yes, always annoying when it finishes 0-0 and you've missed a penalty. Never good. So, podcast predictions-wise, Andy had a 1-0 the whole win. Sadly, no points there. Stu and Matt both had 1-1 draws. and I had a 2-2 draw. Indeed. So yes, a point apiece for me, Stu and Matt. Sadly, Andy yet to get off the mark. Would he get off the mark with his team, Manchester City, taking on Chelsea in the FA Cup semi-final? This one was live on BBC. I only caught the second half of this as we were out shopping, as tends to be the case for some bizarre reason on Saturday evenings. Seemed like it was a bit of a... Did anyone actually watch this? As it was on BBC. From what I can remember of it, it seemed to be one of those games where City tend to sort of dictate the play with about 95% of the games they play. Chelsea probably should have scored about 8 goals on the counter. Nicholas Jackson being very, very wasteful with the chances he had. It was 0-0 at half-time. City eventually got the winner after plugging away, where Bernardo Silva popped up with the winner. I believe it was one of those ones where it sort of works its way to the back stick, some kind of shot. I can't quite remember who it was, but the rebound fell to Bernardo Silva at the back stick, who just tucked it away out of the dive of the keeper. A bit of a... Not to say smash and grab would be an incorrect statement. I think City had the better of the chances, but Chelsea were just very, very wasteful with their chances. We all get points on this one because we all had City wins. Andy had gone 2-0, Haaland and Alvarez, so just a point for the result there. Matt had gone 2-1, Haaland, Fulton and Palmer with the goal, so again, Matt just gets the point for the result. I had 2-1 City with Silva, Doku and Palmer. So I get a bonus point for the goal scorer there. Stu had 1-0. 2 points for the correct score. His goal scorer, Foden, though, sadly did not come off for him. So 2 points for Stu, 2 points for me, point apiece for Matt and Andy. Our third game of the week took us to a Super Sunday, where live on Sky Sports Telebox, we saw Everton taking on Nottingham Forest. A battle of two of the teams towards the bottom end of the division. Safe to say it didn't go to plan, Mr. Moore.
Nothing happened. It was just boring. Just a boring 2-0 loss. There you go. Done and dusted.
Absolutely no controversy in this one as well, I understand. I understand the refs, the assistants, the VARs had absolutely nothing to do with this game.
I think the quote from the end of the game from a certain protagonist was, "Won't given though, was it? Won't given though, was it? Won't given though, was it?" And that pretty much summed it up.
That's an absolute wanker.
Yeah, he just made himself. He made himself look like an absolute knob. You just hold your hand up. But so yeah, by all accounts and from kind of the brief highlights, it was a pretty terrible game. From two pretty terrible teams, and it was won by two decent finishes. So Gay for Everton midway through the first half, stuck it in the back of the, just long distance shot. Some people said the keeper should have done better, but it's one of them ones that goes right in off the post, and I thought not much the keeper could have done through that. It came through quite a few bodies. Nobody closed him down. And then similar kind of deal for Dwight McNeil's second goal. He has a habit of scoring good goals against Forest for some reason. Again, kind of smacks from outside of the area. Not normally a goal that Forest concede. In off the post. Keeper didn't stand a chance. But, kind of... It wasn't. I wouldn't put it as the keeper's fault myself. It's one of them ones where I was surprised that Yates didn't start, and it became quite apparent that we probably needed it. And I don't know why. Forest fans have this kind of really bad, like, love-hate relationship with him. He's not good enough to play in the Premier League. Oh, but we play really well when we have him. Oh, but he's just not good enough. He gives the ball away. He was the perfect kind of player for this game. I don't know why he didn't play. The players that they played instead of him. I like Dominguez. I think he's a really good player. But him and Danilo in that centre mid position was just too passive for me. And
he needed some bite in the midfield.
Yeah, he needed a bit of fight, a bit of kind of thing, because that, you know, that's the one thing Everton, you know, there's not many things Everton are going to do better than you, but the one thing they're going to do better than you is fight, because that's the way all Sean Dyche teams play. That was the game, and that was the performance. I think the general kind of gist I got from the radio commentary, from things that I've read, from little bits that I've seen, that basically the Forest performance was poor, lifeless, and looked like they really couldn't give a shit whether they go down or not. And I think there's a lot of players in the team that are like, well, there's probably some kind of relegation clause, or it's okay because I'll be able to move on to somewhere else, you know. I'm not saying Gibbs White isn't one of these players, but I think Gibbs White, you know, he'll move on. Barilla will move on. The strikers would, a one-year move on, if probably when we go down. Alanga, Hudson-Odoi can probably get games in the Premier League, and once again we'll have another summer of buying a shitload of players, or loaning a shitload of players to get us back up again. So we'll be, at best, like Leeds. I'm kind of sick of talking about it, and I'm definitely sick of hearing about it, but you're going to have to talk about the refereeing. And yeah, I don't know, like, people say three penalties. I've kind of put them in order after watching them several times now of what I think they were. So I think the last one, Young on Hudson-Odoi from behind, that was the most egregious penalty out of the lot. Because not only did he not get the ball, he took him out. But that was a penalty. That was, you know, because I think we spoke about it at the time, immediate reaction. And seeing it once, we'd gone, the handball, the second one was the most obvious one. Whereas I actually think there's probably a good case for, should have been a penalty. Young possibly could have been sent off as well, because Hudson-Odoi was clean through on goal. But that should have been a penalty and possibly a sending off. The second one, and this is the one that has wound me up the most, because the amount of, and I suppose it kind of highlights the problem of the amount of different opinions of it. But when they say, oh, it's a 50-50, his hand moves towards the ball, and there's no way you can't deny that. His hand moves towards the ball to flick it away, and then he tucks his hand and virtually shoves it up his own arse so that the referee doesn't think that it's there, and then he walks away sheepish and does the same cuntish face that is what he does when he speaks to the interviewer later on. This kind of, oh, I've got away with that one. Yeah, you've got away with that one, and I don't know how, you know. And then the Reina one, it's one of them ones. It's been given lots of times this year. It was given the other week to Anthony Gordon against West Ham. He stepped in front of the ball. The player's kicked his foot. He's gone down like a sack of shit. And I think that's the, out of the three, that was the one that I'm like, I've seen him given. It's annoying. But I can understand why that one's gone. The other two, and the fact that, and obviously we'll move on to kind of slowly glide into the next bit, the fact that they've, you know, like, obviously, kind of to jump forward, obviously, there's a whole lot of, reaction, shall we say, from Forest post thing. and they've managed to listen to, I don't know where, I don't know what's happened or how it's got out, but apparently with the third one, the VAR didn't even bother looking at it. Just didn't even bother checking it. Like, he's just gone, ah, it's all right, I won't bother checking that one. What? The player's gone down in the box, you at least need to try and check it a little bit. You know, and you're just like, yes.
Does that mean that when I go to work tomorrow, my boss goes, can you just do that job, you know, that's the actual main point of you being here? I go, nah, I don't fancy doing the last bit, I'm just off home now.
Yeah, it's just like, it's like if you kind of did a run for, like, your job and then just got to the end of it and they've said, they say, is it all gone through all right? And you go, I don't know, probably, you know.
Be all right.
Be fine. No one will worry about it. So obviously then Forrest's reaction. So there was a tweet, 4 to 6 minutes after the game had finished. Quite insightful. Inciting. It's kind of obviously creating an issue, shall we say. Apparently somebody wanted to send that at half time. Thank God that didn't happen. Because that's even more embarrassing than what actually did happen. And then, obviously, I think you kind of, part of the reaction, now I'm not justifying this in terms of Forrest doing it. I think it's completely wrong. I don't think they should have done it. But the media reaction comes quite across slightly xenophobic. And I think, like, Carragher's reaction and Neville's reaction is, well, they can do that in their own country for their spot, their version of football, but in this country, we don't do it here. And you're like, that's kind of mildly kind of, we'll call it xenophobic at best kind of thing. And it's this kind of reaction of, we don't do that here. We don't do that in England. In English football, we don't do this. We don't do that. And you're kind of like, yeah, but we're quite willing to take all the money that comes from around the world, and we're quite willing to welcome these foreign owners in. And I'm not defending the club, but I think some of the media reaction has been over the top, would be part of it, and really reactionary and quite inflammatory. That stuff that Neville and Carragher said was over the top. Obviously, Forrest have kind of slightly started to walk it back by saying they just want transparency, they just want to see things that are fair. But I think the kind of at the heart of all of this is, go and listen back to all the podcasts recently. There's a lot of incidences that Forrest are getting screwed on a regular basis, and even when they do win, there's incidences where you think that it's not even like some of these. Because someone was like, I think I've read a Wolves fan going, well, this has happened to us this season. And you're like, they weren't stonewall penalties. They weren't the 1 year against Newcastle the other week. It wasn't whatever happened with Liverpool. It wasn't the penalty against West Ham. It wasn't Bolly getting a second yellow card, and apparently they can't review that. You know, it's a long, long list at this point of clear and obvious errors. And then, like someone said, it's all well and good getting your letter or your tweet or your social media post or your phone call from Howard Webb going, sorry mate, it was a mistake. And you're like, yeah, but at which point do you kind of go, well, that's not good enough. And like I said, I'm not saying that the Forrest reaction was right, but at some point, somebody did need to call out the fact that this is kind of getting on the absolute bullshit. I know
that it's easy to say this now because of, like, it affecting one of our teams and stuff, but for me, part of the whole point of VAR was to make it more transparent, and if anything, it's gone too far the other way. It's instantly gone to cloak and dagger now. There's like, referees will always defend referees, but the whole point of the video was to make their job easier. And if anything, it's made the standard worse in many ways this season.
Well, it's muddy in the waters. Like the thing that I always had against it was the idea of how can you ever have consistency when it's not the same person giving the decision for all decisions? So the way that it was never going to work, because to make it work, you would have had to do it would have had to be not one VAR appointed for each particular game. It should have been a centralised figure who was the VAR control, and they were sent the incidents to look at. Obviously, the logistics on that are pretty much impossible, because as soon as there's more than one game at any one time, obviously it becomes impossible for them to check it. But like, you would have thought that the idea would be that it's very unlikely that incidents would happen at the exact same moment in more than one game at a time.
And nowadays, if you think about it, with the Premier League, it's very rare you get more than three games being played at once. Though actually,
true.
There's not them many games. You know, fair enough, that person's going to be working however many days a week. But I just think, when it first came in, I know it was annoying that it stopped. It was stopping and starting, and they were reviewing things a lot. But there were less mistakes. Everything was right. Everything was bob on. You might not have agreed with it, but it was right. But then in this haste of, because people have twisted, once again, it's the top six managers twisting. It's because they're not getting the rub of the green like they used to in the past. We want it quicker. We want it sorted out. You're taking the fun out of the game. You're doing this, that, and the other. All right, but now we've made something that should have worked and turned it into something that is now, it's broken beyond use. It's just absolutely useless now, because it's not being used to correct those mistakes that are there. And like I said, it is subjective as well, which is, I know that's always been the thing with refereeing, but the rules are so pinpoint and so kind of don't give any kind of flexibility or wiggle room. It shouldn't be so subjective.
No, that's the thing. They've obviously tried to make the handball law more sort of stringent by bringing in like the t-shirt rule, and then that's been up for debate and stuff like that. So I think the more they go across it, the more they're going to have issues with it, and it's never going to be a perfect system. But they've ploughed that much money into it now that we're kind of stuck with it. We're probably just going to have to sort of get on board with the fact that it's going to be there. It's never going to be perfect. It's never going to be what we want it to be. And it's just shite, I suppose, at the end of it.
It's sort of like bringing it back to real life again, though. Like, if you messed something up at work that cost your company the amount of money that it could cost Forest if they end up going down, you'd be at least on as a disciplinary, but it's like, oh, well, the referees, they can't be touched, they can't be seen to be persecuted in public because it'll bring the game into disrepute. They've done a shit job. Tell them they've done a shit job, because that's the only way it's going to get better. And, like, again, it's like with the real-life thing, like, if they have made a mistake, like they did, granted, like Matt was saying before, the Liverpool game, the whole thing with the ball and like where they give it back to him and all the rest of it, they came out and made a mistake, and in a way you can't change what's happened. It's not made it any better, but at least you kind of like, well, yeah, well, at least they know about it, at least they're, do you know what I mean, at least there's a bit of sort of admission. Whereas like stuff like particularly the fact that there was three for one team in one game and nothing's really seemingly getting done about it, it feels like a big FU to Forest.
I mean, it's like you said, I think the unfortunate thing is that we're stuck in, you know, like I said, it kind of refers back to, and it's not just Carragher and Neville, they were just the immediate ones that reacted to it. But it's happened across the board. It's happened in all the newspapers. It's happened on the TV. All this kind of thing of, well, you know, you've got to remember where you are kind of thing. Oh, yeah, I'm sorry, you're in the home of football. We invented it, you know. But I've lost the track up. But I think it still is. Ralphie's joining in. I think it's this attitude of, oh, well, you know, the refs, they're giving up their own time. They're not part-time anymore. It's not like when we started watching football, where the referees had another job. They turned up on a Saturday. Yeah, they got paid handsomely to do it, or, you know, decent amount for turning up on a Saturday. But on the whole, it was their second job. Nowadays, it is their job. They spend their weeks being referees, training to be referees, studying rules and hoping to get better. And Stuart Atwell, who was the VAR, who, you know, the accused Luton fan, I mean, of course no one's admitted to that, are they? But,
well, nobody would, though, to be fair, would they?
He is, tonight he was reffing the Bournemouth game, the Wolves-Bournemouth game, so no kind of consequences to him being terrible on Sunday. Oh, yeah, and he's been selected to be the VAR specialist at the Euros in the summer. But congratulations on that one. I mean, absolutely zero consequences.
At least he won't be able to be the one for the England game, then. That's the only...
I know, but now you've got to think about, oh, it's England, but then he can't do Scotland either because English hate Scotland, and, well, definitely not the Germans because we've had a bit of bother with them in the past as well. And, well, we're not particularly fussy. We're not particularly keen on the French either. You know,
Well, I feel like the can of worms is sufficiently open now. So we'll pop a lid on the.
Well, I'll just add one little cherry on top of that. It was the Forest Points deduction appeal hearing today. So just to date that, Wednesday the 24th of April. So it was the points deductions hearing today, the appeal. Results next week, so yeah, we get to talk about that next week. Yay!
Watch this space. So yes, so 2-0 Everton, Gay and McNeil with the goals. No one had an Everton win on the cards. Stu and Andy had both gone 1-0 Forest, so no points there. Matt had gone for a 1-1 draw. Calvert-Lewin as the goal scorer for Everton. No points there. I'd gone for a 2-2 draw. And Calvert-Lewin and Garner I had as my goal scorer for Everton. So, no points for any in that game. Might as well have not happened. From a prediction perspective, we move on. So, our next game sees my lot Middlesbrough taking on Leeds United, the dirty loss from West Yorkshire. It will be the first thing we discuss when we return from what can only be described as a minimalist break. Stay right where you are. You won't need to do anything. We will be right back in just a few moments.
Recording in progress.
And just like that, we're back. So, as we said before the break, next game, Middlesbrough versus Leeds United. And this one started like a bit of a train as Borough took the lead within 5 minutes. Ball through. Emmanuel Latte last managed to get onto the end of it. Just ahead of the Leeds defender, whose name I cannot remember for the life of me. I don't know if it was Joe. In fact, let's just go with it. Joe Rodon. No one's going to check it. So Joe Rodon and the keeper, Ilan Melier, managed to converge on Latte last and did their best to try and insert themselves into him. I think it's probably the safest thing to say at that particular point.
They just got mixed up. You're supposed to put coffee in a cup, but they wanted a sandwich.
Yeah, well, that is true. But yes, he was very much the meat in a Leeds sandwich. Probably could have been given as a penalty, but the ball broke free to Isaiah Jones to tap home from all of about 3 yards out to give Borough the lead. Now, unfortunately, I was in transit as that first goal went in and was stepping into the adult establishment, Gayheads at the Gutter. It was a pub. A server of refreshing beverages. Just as Leeds rattled in the equalising penalty, Crescencio Sullivan with the equaliser after, I believe it was even Sullivan who was brought down in the box. I think it was him that got the wrong side of Anthony Dykstiel, who was playing at right back in place of the unable to play Luke Ayling. And needless to say, Leeds very much exposed Borough's weakness down on the right-hand side all evening. Very much played up to that. Dykstiel got his legs tangled up with Somerville, brought him down, clear penalty. Somerville got up, dispatched the penalty to make it 1-1. Not too long after that, it was 2-1 to Leeds, and I think we all know what's happening here, boys. It was returning ex-Middlesbrough player Patrick Bamford, who, honestly, this may have come off his penis. I am not entirely convinced that it hasn't gone in off his cock. The ball was whipped in from the left-hand side, right in that area where the keeper's a bit sort of, does he come, does he go, ends up doing nothing. Doesn't either. And Bamford allows the ball to sort of come across him. It looks as if it goes off either his gut, for want of a better phrase, or the... And my friend who was watching at the time said, oh no, that's definitely the top of the thigh. And I was like, yeah, mate. I'd love to have a thigh that big. Jesus Christ.
Should probably say at this point that Hull City striker Billy Sharp was on the panel, and at half time of the game he went, well, he's done what he could do with it, to be fair, from there. It was a good finish. Mate, if that is a good finish, I mean, coming from the Championship's all-time leading goal scorer, you've not done your punditry credentials any good there, have you, kid?
Yes, it was... Needless to say, not the cleanest of finishes, but a finish nonetheless to make it 2-1 at Leeds. Borough did get back into it on the half-hour mark to make it 2-2. Ball in to Emmanuel Latelaf, who picked it up on the left-hand side of the box in a very similar fashion to how he scored against, I believe it was Swansea. Managed to sort of get the ball out of his feet, traverse across the box, made the sort of the angle to be able to get a shot off, and with very little backlift, got an incredible amount of power behind his shot from the edge of the box to get it past Melier. Some would argue that Melier could probably do better with it. He did get a hand to it, but I think the power that he generated in the shot just meant that he just took it past him. Sadly, Borough were not able to get into half-time level at 2 apiece, as Leeds scored their third, and very controversial it was also. Ball was played into Willie Nondo, who was in an offside position, but potentially the sight line of him was blocked by Leeds' Patrick Bamford, which I feel makes it even worse, because surely if you can see that he's there, surely that's offside. Because if you can see that there's clearly a player in line with him, is that not offside? But it's one of those ones where Had VAR intervened on that one, if VAR was in the Championship, that would definitely have been given offside. The goal wouldn't have been scored, but no VAR in the Championship, so it was. So Leeds went in 3-2 ahead at the break. After the break, they made it 4-2 in the 61st minute. As annoying as this one was, it was a lovely team goal, to be fair. Lovely pass and move all the way from the back to the front. Ended with Crescencio Somerville doing what he seems to have done for about 80% of his goals this season. Cutting in from the left flank, shifting it onto his right foot, and just angling it past the goalkeeper. With a bit of whip on it, and just sort of bent it in the corner. Really, really nice finish. I feel a bit dirty, but I even applauded it because it was that good and that good a team goal in the pub. So yeah, 4-2 to Leeds. Borough did manage to get themselves back into the game on the 87th minute when sub Alex Gilbert picked up the ball in around the halfway line, just dinked a bit of a speculative ball over the top. Well, it certainly seemed as though it was a bit of a speculative ball. Didn't realise that Emmanuel Latanath was on the end of it for the looping header to take it over the keeper from the edge of the box. I would say goal of the night, but it definitely wasn't better than Latanath's first goal. But it was one of those ones where a definite goal that just came out of nothing. And definitely made for an interesting last 5 or 10 minutes. The Leeds fans clearly shitting themselves that they were going to throw it away again, as they always seem to. But sadly, the equaliser was not forthcoming. And Middlesbrough succumbed to a 3-4 defeat. They did need to win this game to keep their hopes of an outside shot at the playoffs alive. So sadly, that is and has cut paid to hopes that Middlesbrough will not be playing in the Championship next season. They are confirmed as one of the 24 teams that will be in the Championship next season. 3-4 for Leeds. Predictions-wise, Andy had gone for a 5-0 Middlesbrough win. He did have Latte score 3, though, so does pick up 2 bonus points for the fact that he got 2. So well done to Andy. Sadly, Silvera and Barlaser didn't get a goal. The rest of us had all gone draws. Matt had gone 1-1, Latelath and Bamford. Stuart had gone 1-1, Latelath and Bamford. I had gone 2-2. I'd gone Latelath and Azaz, sadly Azaz didn't score, Bumford. I've got Stu disease. I've called him Bumford, just like Stu said. I had Bamford and Somerville to score for Leeds. So 3 points for me, 2 points apiece for Stu, Matt and Andy on that one. Our final game of the week takes us to FA Cup semi-finalists Coventry City playing their game in hand against, or their rearranged game, should I say, from earlier in the season when they were in the quarterfinals of the FA Cup, when they took on Stu's Hull City. Was this very much a after the Lord Mayor's show for Coventry after their heroics against Manchester United on Sunday?
Well, obviously Norwich had picked up a result annoyingly at the weekend, so that meant that this became a must-win game for Hull. The fact that Coventry had extra time and penalties, and to be fair, one of the best comebacks you'll ever watch in an FA Cup game, featuring a lower league side versus a Premier League side, played right into Hull's hands. I think I'd spent a good few minutes texting new lads over the weekend saying, come on, extra time, and that was before the game had even kicked off. but it seemed to work a treat. So after 31 minutes, Hull managed to get themselves in front. I will add, by the point of the goal, I think Hull had already had something like 4 or 5 corners, so they were definitely going for it. But the goal was sloppy, for want of a better term, in the sense of reasonable bit of play down the left-hand side. Philogene picks up the ball on the edge of the box and unleashed what can only be described as a routine shot straight down the throat of the goalkeeper, who proceeded to absolutely fuck it. And it just trickled into the net. So 1-0 Hull, obviously not going to complain at that. The bit that I will complain about is that Coventry were level just 5 minutes later. However, the goal this time was of a much, much better standard. Free kick given away on the edge of the box, which is obviously the disappointing part. But then Casey Palmer absolutely top binned it. Top left hand side, keeper not a chance. And yeah, it was a good free kick, really good free kick. I had this horrible feeling then that the game would either peter out to a draw, or Coventry would go on to win. So much to my surprise, just on the stroke of half time, I believe it was Matty Jacob who'd got himself into the box. Just. And was then brought down. And obviously, no Toufan on the pitch. He was on the bench tonight. And so up steps Carvalho, who himself has missed the penalty already this season. And yeah, scored. So Hull went into the break 2-1 up. Looking all right. Unfortunately, on 58 minutes, Coventry equalised again. And again, with another goalkeeping error. So to make that one keeping error apiece. Ball got played across to the back post. Shot comes in. Oh, I think it was a header that came in from the right-hand side. And I'm not sure if it was the feed that I'd seen of the goal or if it was just actually this bad, but it appeared to head towards the goal in slow motion. Ryan Allsopp moved with the pace of an absolute sloth and flapped at it and just let it go past him. Really bad goalkeeping. Not his first mistake either. But I thought that whole getting beat on the near post thing had finished. Apparently he's had enough of that now and he's just getting beat on the back stick by flapping at that one instead. So at least he's supposed needs to maybe vary that training up somewhat this week. You know, says me, the professional goalkeeper. Anyway, with worries that it would stick at 2-2 and completely derail any kind of slim hope we've still got of the playoffs, Coventry were kind enough to gift us a winner. On 78 minutes, ball got played through the middle and two of the heroes from their FA Cup trials and tribulations combined, centre-half, left it for the goalkeeper, who left it for the centre-half, who left it for Noah Ohio to just nip in and stab one home from all of 4 yards, I think it was. Won't be necessarily his best goal that he'll ever score. Maybe his most important one for Hull, however, this season, we shall see. So yeah, Hull won 3-2. Puts us 3 points behind Norwich. Norwich are on 72, which gives us 69, dudes.
A funny number, whichever way you look at it. Lovely stuff. Yes, 2-3, keeping Hull very much in the shout for the playoffs. Coventry now need a bit of a miracle. 9 points back, nine to play for. Needing Norwich to lose games. So, you would imagine, let me just double check, as it stands, it's looking like 2 from 3. It's basically 2 out of West Brom, Norwich and Hull for the last 2 playoff spots, basically.
I'm still standing by the fact that I don't think we'll do it on the basis that we've got to play Ipswich this coming week and it's on telly and we know how much that Sky are enjoying that whole storyline, if you like, this season. So, I can't see it. I think if we did and we went up, it would be way too soon for this side anyway. But it's nice to be 2 games away from the end of the season and still be in with a shout of playing for something.
Absolutely. I'd seen a tweet the other day that said something along the lines of, it's absolutely outrageous that it's the third week in April and still only 4 teams are guaranteed to be in the Championship next season. It's absolutely ridiculous. So fingers crossed the Hull can get the points they need to get on the board to see them into the playoffs and extend the season for us for a couple of extra weeks. Predictions-wise, Matt had gone for a 2-2 draw. So, one goalkeeping howler aside, you would have had a perfect score there, Matt, unfortunately. Sims and Eccles is his Coventry goal scorers. Dalap and Philogy as his Hull goal scorers. So, does get a bonus point for the goal scorer there from Philogy. The rest of us all had Hull wins. Andy had gone 2-0. Dalap and Shah. So, no points there for the goal scorers, but a point for the result. Stuart gone 1-0 with Carvalho to score. So, 2 points there. I'd gone 2-1 to Hull. Had you right for Coventry, Ulmer and Philogene as my goal scorers. So 2 points for me. So that means that for the week, from five games, Andy, a very respectable 4 points. Matt, 5 points. He obviously needs to be off the podcast to win, clearly. As Andy pointed out. Stu, 7 points from five games. We've taken the win for this week. And back on top, 8 points from the five games played. Big pat on the back for Mr. Williams. I believe we have four games. We do. Four games in week 39. The first of which sees Brighton and Hove Albion taking on Andrew's adopted team of Manchester City. Now, obviously, this is Andrew's team. He will go last with his prediction. Man City going to this off the back of, obviously, winning their FA Cup semi-final against Chelsea at the weekend. But they go into this game sans Erling Haaland. So will they be able to do it without the big Norwegian? I say, yes, they can. 2-0 Manchester City win for me. Goal apiece for Foden and De Bruyne. Stu, what have you got down for Brighton versus Man City?
I also have a 0-2. And I've got Grealish and Doku.
Greasy Jack. And Jinky Jeremy. Lovely. Matt?
I've got a 2-1 Manchester City win.
Your Brighton goal scorer,
João Pedro.
And your two Manchester City goal scorers,
Alvarez and Foden.
Now, Mr. Cook, we come to you having, I believe we'll be breaking a streak of Manchester City predictions where you may have been going 2-0 with Haaland and Alvarez. Given the news that Mr. Haaland will not play, does this change your 2-0 prediction, or does it just change the scorer in your 2-0 prediction?
Yes, it just changes the scorer. I have a 0-2 prediction, and I have the same goal scorers as Matthew, Foden and Alvarez.
Very, very nice. Our second game of the week, sadly, has nothing riding on it anymore, as it's Cardiff City versus my boys Middlesbrough. My team, therefore, I'll give my prediction last. Let's go. Let's just jump straight back into Mr. Cook, shall we? What have you got for Cardiff versus Middlesbrough?
Another 0-2. Borough winning with two goals. Latte laugh. And as he will now be known, Barry Barlaser.
Matt?
I've gone for a 1-1 draw, like end of season, 1-1 draw type of thing. And I've got Mate, is it, for Cardiff?
Yes.
And a Latte laugh for the Borough.
Stu?
Well, having looked into Cardiff's form over the last five games, they have won, lost, won, lost, won. So in theory, they will lose. Obviously, one of those losses was against us as well. So I've got a Cardiff 1, Middlesbrough 2 scoreline. Exactly the same two goal scorers as Matt, with a little bit of an added azaz.
I see what you've done there. It's very nice. I agreed with Matthew. I too have gone for a 1-1 draw. Cardiff seem to have been one of those teams that have been playing spoiler this season. Southampton were absolutely flying, conceded a last minute goal to lose against Cardiff, which pretty much put them out of the automatic promotion race. If they weren't out of it, they certainly are after getting pumped 5-0 by Leicester. Let's put it that way. I think they also beat Ipswich 2-1 within the last couple of weeks with a last-minute goal winner against them as well. But yeah, I've gone for a 1-1 draw on this one. Again, like Matt said, end of the season. Neither team can get anything out of this one. So, bit of a why are we even playing this game? Oh, it's because we have to, otherwise we'll get a fine. 1-1, Dieu, and to continue his hot streak, Latte laugh with the goal scorers for me. Our third game, is the aforementioned live on the Sky Telebox, Hull City versus promotion chasing Ipswich Town. Even though it's an 8 p.m. start, is it understandable that all the family will be in attendance?
Well, three of the four of us will be, even though it's very late. Yeah, we'll all be there. And just as a little side note as well, the day after this game, the boys are doing football training with the Hull City captain, Louis Coyle. So there'll be three very tired boys the next day. Obviously, I'm not training. I mean, Louis and my two lads.
So it's his boys and his boys, literally. He will give his prediction last. Matt, what have you got down for Hull versus Ipswich?
I've gone for a 1-1 draw for this one. Kind of get the feeling it might be a bit of a stalemate and no good for anybody.
Goal scorers?
Chaplin for Ipswich and Philogene for Hull.
Very nice. Andrew?
It's just a simple 1-0. Delap,
of course, back in the fold and back in the starting lineup against Coventry, so you love to see it. Sadly, I have got an Ipswich win on this one. Don't know why. I just feel like they might have a little bit too much for Hull. Obviously, they need the points to sort of get back on top. Obviously, they've still got that game in hand against Coventry from the weekend because the FA Cup semi-final. But they now do find themselves behind Leeds and Leicester in the race for promotion. So they need the win to get back above at least Leeds. I've gone for a 2-1 Ipswich. I've gone for Carvalho to score for Hull. Goal apiece for Sarmiento and Mua for Ipswich. I thought I'd keep it in the podcast. How do you see it, though, Mr. Wilson?
Well, the result against Coventry obviously sets this up nicely for TV in the respect of Hull need to win. I assume that Norwich will have played earlier that day. Yet they play Swansea at 3 o'clock. So Hull will go into this knowing what's happened. If Norwich have lost or indeed drawn, it might even spur them on somewhat. Ipswich obviously needing to win to stay in touch with the top of the division for automatic promotion. Obviously, it'd be bittersweet because if Ipswich do win, there's a good chance that'll go towards helping Leeds not get promoted, but also means we won't get in the playoffs as well. I feel like you said that there's been a bit of a storyline throughout the season of, ooh, look at the new boys that have come straight up from the league below. Nobody expected them to do so well, and I just think Ipswich will end up doing it. So unfortunately, I have gone for Hull 0, Ipswich 1, with Charlie Chaplin to score the winner.
Oh, God. Rolling back the years. If he scores the goal, I'll give you the money myself. Our final game of the week is podcast derby time, as we see Matthew's Nottingham Forest taking on Andrew's Manchester City. It's a battle of the ooze, technically. This one also live on the Sky Telebox. Sunday. Super Sunday, nevertheless. I've forgotten how we do these. Is it the away team that we give the last two, or is it the home team we give the last two? So, Matthew's on us as it's Manchester, as it's Nottingham Forest playing at home. So we'll go to Matt last. I've gone for a 3-1 away win for Manchester City. Now, I don't know if we've had this as a rule before. So we've got the old boy rule. Have we ever had daddy rule?
Absolutely not, because if you ever said that before, it would have definitely been cancelled from the podcast to ever be said again. Because that is definitely something that should never, ever be said on this podcast ever again.
Okay.
Everyone's ick is definitely in full fledged right now.
Okay, maybe not the daddy rule, but the father used to play for them rule. Because I've got one for both teams.
It's wordy, but also it doesn't make me want to throw up in my mouth. So, yes.
Okay, so we'll go with the father used to play for you rule, or used to play for them rule. So, like I said, I've got one apiece.
You could call it the former player, FFP, if you wanted.
Ah, wow, yes, one of Forrest's favourite things. And it is definitely the FFP game, as it's Forest with their however many charges against Manchester City with their.
These are the exact amount of charges that we had.
I was going to say, so Paul's score prediction surely is 1 to 115 is the.
that might be the case. Yes, I've gone 3-1 Man City. I've gone for Rayner to score for Forest, as his dad played for Man City. I've gone for Haaland to score for Man City, as his dad used to play for Forest. I don't think Foden's dad ever played football.
But Haaland's dad also played for Man City as well, so...
Haaland's dad also did play for Man City. That is very true. I suppose, technically, I could have even gone for an own goal. But I'd and honestly, Julian Alvarez's dad, Argentinian, can probably play football. Whether he did, I've no idea. But yes, Reina for Forest, Haaland, Foden and Alvarez for Man City. Stu, what have you got for Forest City?
You were nearly getting a slap when you started announcing that, because I too have got a Forest 1 at Manchester City 3 scoreline. I too have Alvarez and Foden, but my other one was De Bruyne. And the Forest one, I've got Hudson-Odoi, because he feels a bit overdue. Particularly, as Matt pointed out in the group, Wood's not firing at the moment, so I felt like I needed to keep my hands away from that one.
Not your best work. Not your best work. I'll just say that. Mr. Cook, what have you got down for your boys against... Not your boys. I don't know where I was going with that one.
As he's in the room, I've given him a goal, but I've also given City 2. So it's a 1-2. He may not be firing, but he's still in my scoreline. I have Wood, gentlemen. And then straight back into the Man City double for me. Haaland and Alvarez, please.
Haaland and Alvarez. So, for the final news, the final word from a predictions perspective, Mr. Moore, how is it going to go down?
I've gone for a Manchester City 4-1 win.
Whew. He's gone less optimistic than All of us combined. Your Nottingham Forest goal scorer, please.
I've gone Elanga. I think at times the Man City defence can be quite statuesque, so I think possibly the pace might do them. I doubt it, but you know. And then I've gone Foden, Silva, and then these two have been surprisingly out of form recently. So, of course, go and play Forest. Get yourself back into gear. I've got De Bruyne and Grealish, because there's always an English player that's not doing particularly well. Come and see Forest. We'll sort that right out for you. So, yeah.
4-1. Hefty, hefty bit of kit. That is your four games for the week, ladies and gentlemen. Obviously, do we have odds, Mr. Womansea, for our respective teams?
We do. And obviously now, because Manchester City are included in the games for the odds this week, unfortunately, not all of the teams can win. So, if Hull, Middlesbrough and Forest were to win, that would give you odds of 49, nearly 50 to 1 for Hull, Borough and Forest to win. I think that, for all three sides to win, it's a big ask. But all three sides to draw, I would have suggested, is slightly more likely, but not in the eyes of one Mr. William Hill, who would give you 62.6 to 1 on all three teams, Forest, Borough and Hull to draw. And then, should the worst happen, you can console yourself with just about 9 to 1 for Ipswich, Cardiff and Manchester City to do the winnings this weekend.
Clearly, all of our teams very much the underdogs in their respective games, apart from Mr. Cook's team, who will probably be the heavy, heavy favourite in theirs. There you have it, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you once again for tuning in and joining us to go through the happenings and whatnot of our teams. Obviously, my team's story has ended for yet another season, but the rest of these boys' teams is very much still up for grabs. Thank you for joining us once again. Tune in next week, where we'll break it all down and go through it all once again for you. But until then, look after yourselves. Take care of each other. We'll see you next week. Tatty bye for now.
So there we are. What do you think to that? Season's nearly over. Shame for some teams, obviously. Obviously, it's one of those. Not a shame for other teams, but yeah. Bit of a shame. Before you go, please do consider like, share, subscribe and comment. Leave a review where you can leave a review. And check out the website, thecookiecast.com. There you can find your social media links and an email button, and that way you can get in touch with us. That is it for this one. Until next time, I'm going to say bye, and I'll see you then.
Thank you for listening to these grumpy old men talk about football. If you've enjoyed this episode, please like, share, and subscribe.